Whit!
Adolin called, waving. The newcomer trotted up to them. Tall and thin, the king's Whit rode easily on a black gelding. He wore a stiff black coat and black trousers, color matched by his deep onyx hair. Though he wore a long, thin sword tied to his waist, as far as Adolin knew, the man had never drawn it. A dueling foil rather than a military blade, it was mostly symbolic. Whit nodded to them as he approached, wearing one of those keen smiles of his. He had blue eyes, but he wasn't really a light eyes. Nor was he a dark eyes. He was, well, he was the king's Whit. That was a category all its own.
"Ah, young Prince Adolin," Whit exclaimed. "You actually managed to pry yourself away from the camp's young women long enough to join this hunt? I'm impressed."
Adolin chuckled uncomfortably.
"Well, that's been a topic of some discussion lately."
Whit raised an eyebrow. Adolin sighed. Whit would find out eventually anyway. It was virtually impossible to keep anything from the man.
"I made a lunch appointment with one woman yesterday, but I was... well, I was courting another. And she's the jealous type. So now neither will speak with me." "It's a constant source of amazement that you get yourself into such messes, Adolin. Each one is more exciting than the previous."
Yes. Exciting. That's exactly how it feels." Whit laughed again, though he maintained a sense of dignity in his posture. The king's Whit was not a silly court fool such as one might find in other kingdoms. He was a sword, a tool maintained by the king. Insulting others was beneath the dignity of the king, so just as one used gloves when forced to handle something vile, the king retained a wit so he didn't have to debase himself to the level of rudeness or offensiveness. This new Whit had been with them for some months, and there was something different about him. He seemed to know things that he shouldn't. Important things. Useful things. Whit nodded to Dalinar. "Your lordship?"
"Whit,"
Dalinar said stiffly.
"And young Prince Renarin."
Renarin kept his eyes down.
"No greeting for me, Renarin?"
Whit said, amused. Renarin said nothing.
"He thinks you'll mock him if he speaks to you, Whit,"
Adolin said.
"Earlier this morning he told me he's determined not to say anything around you." "Wonderful," Whit exclaimed. "Then I can say whatever I wish and he'll not object?"
Renarin hesitated. Whit leaned in to Adolin.
"Have I told you about the night Prince Renarin and I had 2 days back, walking the streets of the war camp? We came across these two sisters, you see, blue-eyed and—"
"That's a lie,"
Renarin said, blushing.
"Very well," Whit said without missing a beat. "I'll confess there were actually three sisters, but Prince Renarin quite unfairly ended up with two of them, and I didn't wish to diminish my reputation by—"
"Whit," Dalinar was stern as he cut in. The black-clad man looked to him. "Perhaps you should restrict your mockery to those who deserve it."
"Right, Lord Dalinar. I believe that was what I was doing."
Dalinar's frown deepened.
He never had liked Whit, and picking on Renarin was a sure way to raise his ire.
Adolin could understand that, but Whit was almost always good-natured with Renarin. Whit moved to leave, passing Dalinar as he did. Adolin could barely overhear what was said as Whit leaned over to whisper something.
"Those who deserve my mockery are those who can benefit from it, Bright Lord Dalinar. That one is less fragile than you think him."
He winked, then turned his horse to move on over the bridge.
"Storm winds, but I like that man," Adolin said. "Best wit we've had in ages."
"I find him unnerving," Renarin said softly.
"That's half the fun."
Dalinar said nothing. The three of them crossed the bridge, passing Whit, who had stopped to torment a group of officers, light eyes of low enough rank that they needed to serve in the army and earn a wage.
Several of them laughed, while Wit poked fun at another. The three of them joined the king and were immediately approached by the day's huntmaster. Bashan was a short man, with a sizable paunch. He wore rugged clothing with a leather overcoat and a wide-brimmed hat. He was a Dark Eyes of the First Non, the highest and most prestigious rank a Dark Eyes could have, worthy even of marrying into a Light-Eyed family. Bashan bowed to the king.
"Your Majesty, wonderful timing. We've just tossed down the bait."
"Excellent," Elokar said, climbing from the saddle. Adolin and Dalinar did likewise, shardplate clinking softly, Dalinar untying his helm from the saddle.
"How long will it take?"
2 or 3 hours is likely," Bashan said, taking the reins of the king's horse. Grooms took the two Rashadium. "We've set up over there."
Bashan pointed toward the hunting plateau, the smaller plateau where the actual fighting would take place, away from the attendants and the bulk of the soldiers. A group of hunters led a lumbering chul around its perimeter, towing a rope draped over the side of the cliff. That rope would be dragging the bait.
"We're using hog carcasses," Bashan explained, "and we poured hog's blood over the sides. The chasm fiend has been spotted by patrols here a good dozen times. He's got his nest nearby for certain. He's not here to poopate. He's too big for that. And he's remained in the area too long. So it should be a fine hunt. Once he arrives, we'll loose a group of wild hogs as distractions, and you can begin weakening him with arrows."
They had brought grand bows. Large steel bows with thick strings and such a high draw weight that only a shard-bearer could use them, to fire shafts as thick as 3 fingers. They were recent creations, devised by Lethe engineers through the use of fabrial science, and each required a small infused gemstone to maintain the strength of its pull without warping the metal. Adolin's aunt Navani, the widow of King Gavilar, mother of Elokar and his sister Yasna, had led the research to develop the bows. It would be nice if she hadn't left, Adolin thought idly. Navani was an interesting woman. Things were never boring around her. Some had started calling the bows shard bows, but Adolin didn't like the term. Shard blades and shard plate were something special, relics from another time, a time when the Radiance had walked Roshar. No amount of fabrial science had even approached recreating them. Bashan led the king and his high princes toward a pavilion at the center of the viewing plateau. Adolin joined his father, intending to give a report on the crossing. About half of the soldiers were in place, but many of the attendants were still making their way across the large permanent bridge onto the viewing plateau. The king's banner flapped above the pavilion, and a small refreshment station had been erected. A soldier at the back was setting up the rack of 4 grand bows. They were sleek and dangerous-looking, with thick black shafts in 4 quivers beside them.
"I think you'll have a fine day for the hunt," Bashan said to Dalinar. "Judging by reports, the beast is a big one. Larger than you've ever slain before, Bright Lord."
"Gavilar always wanted to slay one of these," Dalinar said wistfully. "He loved great shell hunts, though he never got a chasm fiend. Odd that I've now killed so many."
The chul pulling the bait bleated in the distance.
"You need to go for the legs on this one, Bright Lords," Bashan said.
Pre-hunt advice was one of Bashan's responsibilities, and he took those seriously.
"Chasm fiends, well, you're used to attacking them in their chrysalises. Don't forget how mean they are when they're not pupating. With one this big, use a distraction and come in from—"
He trailed off, then groaned, cursing softly.
"Storms take that animal. I swear the man who trained it must have been daft."
He was looking across at the next plateau. Adolin followed his glance. The crab-like chul that had been towing the bait was lumbering away from the chasm with a slow yet determined gait. Its handlers were yelling, running after it.
"I'm sorry, Bright Lord," Bashan said. "It's been doing this all day."
The chul bleated in a gravelly voice. Something seemed wrong to Adolin.
"We can send for another one," Elokar said. "It shouldn't take too long to..."
"Bashan," Delinar said, his voice suddenly alarmed.
"Shouldn't there be bait on the end of that beast's rope?"
The huntmaster froze. The rope the Chul was towing was frayed at the end. Something dark, something mind-numbingly enormous, rose out of the chasm on thick chitinous legs. It climbed onto the plateau. Not the small plateau where the hunt was supposed to take place, but the viewing plateau where Dalinar and Adolin stood. The plateau filled with attendants, unarmed guests, female scribes, and unprepared soldiers.
"Oh, damnation," Bashan said.
XIII. 10 heartbeats. "I realize that you are probably still angry. That is pleasant to know. Much as your perpetual health, I have come to rely upon your dissatisfaction with me. It is one of the Cosmere's great constants, I should think." 10 heartbeats. 1. That was how long it took to summon a shard blade. If Dalinar's heart was racing, the time was shorter. If he was relaxed, it took longer. 2. On the battlefield, the passing of those beats could stretch like an eternity. He pulled his helm on as he ran. 3. The chasm fiend slammed an arm down, smashing the bridge filled with attendants and soldiers. People screamed, plunging into the chasm. Dalinar dashed forward on plate-enhanced legs, following the king. 4. The chasm fiend towered like a mountain of interlocking carapace, the color of dark violet ink. Dalinar could see why the Parshendi called these things gods. It had a twisted arrowhead-like face with a mouth full of barbed mandibles. While it was vaguely crustacean, this was no bulky, placid chul. It had 4 wicked foreclaws set into broad shoulders, each claw the size of a horse, and 12 smaller legs that clutched the side of the plateau. 5. Chitin made a grinding noise against stone as the creature finished pulling itself onto the plateau, snatching a cart-pulling chul with a swift claw. 6.
"To arms! To arms!"
Elokar bellowed ahead of Dalinar.
"Archers, fire!"
7.
"Distracted from the unarmed," Dalinar bellowed at his soldiers.
The creature cracked the chul's shell, platter-sized fragments clattering to the plateau, then stuffed the beast into its maw and began looking down at the fleeing scribes and attendants. The chul stopped bleeding as the monster crunched down. 8. Dalinar leaped a rocky shelf and sailed 5 yards before slamming into the ground, throwing up chips of rock. 9. The chasm fiend bellowed with an awful screeching sound. It trumpeted with 4 voices overlapping one another. Archers drew. Elokar yelled orders just in front of Dalinar, his blue cape flapping. Dalinar's hand tingled with anticipation. 10. His shard blade, Oathbringer, formed in his hand, coalescing from mist, appearing as the 10th beat of his heart thudded in his chest. 6 feet long from tip to hilt, the blade would have been unwieldy in the hands of any man not wearing shard plate. To Dalinar, it felt perfect. He'd carried Oathbringer since his youth, bonding to it when he was 20 weepings old. It was long and slightly curved, a handspan wide, with wave-like serrations near the hilt. It curved at the tip like a fisherman's hook, and was wet with cold dew. This sword was a part of him. He could sense energy racing along its blade as if it were eager. A man never really knew life itself until he charged into battle with plate and blade.
"Make it angry!"
Elokar bellowed, his shard blade, Sunraiser, springing from mist into his hand. It was long and thin with a large crossing guard, and was etched up the sides with the 10 fundamental glyphs. He didn't want the monster to escape. Dalinar could hear it in his voice. Dalinar was more worried about the soldiers and attendants. This hunt had already turned terribly wrong. Perhaps they should distract the monster long enough for everyone to escape, then pull back and let it dine on chulls and hogs. The creature screamed its multi-voiced wail again, slamming a claw down among the soldiers. Men screamed. Bones splintered and bodies crumpled. Archers loosed, aiming for the head. 100 shafts zipped into the air, but only a few hit the soft muscle between plates of chitin. Behind them, Sadius was calling for his grand bow. Dalinar couldn't wait for that. The creature was here, dangerous, killing his men. The bow would be too slow. This was a job for the blade. Adolin charged past, riding Sureblood. The lad had gone racing for his horse rather than charging like Elokar had. Dalinar himself had been forced to stay with the king. The other horses, even the war horses, panicked. But Adolin's white Rashadium stallion held steady. In a moment, Gallant was there, trotting beside Dalinar. Dalinar grabbed the reins and heaved himself into the air with plate-enhanced legs, jumping up into the saddle. The force of his landing might have strained the back of a regular horse, but Gallant was made of stronger stone than that. Elokar closed his helm, the sides misting.
"Hold back, Your Majesty," Dalinar called, riding past. "Wait until Adolin and I weaken it."
Dalinar reached up, slamming down his own visor. The sides misted, locking it into place, and the sides of the helm became translucent to him. You still needed the eye slit. Looking through the sides was like looking through dirty glass, but the translucence was one of the most wonderful parts of Shardblade. Dalinar rode into the monster's shadow. Soldiers scrambled about, clutching spears. They hadn't been trained to fight 30-foot-tall beasts, and it was a testament to their valor that they formed up anyway, trying to draw attention away from the archers and the fleeing attendants. Arrows rained down, bouncing off the carapace and becoming more deadly to the troops below than they were to the chasm fiend. Dalinar raised his free arm to shade his eye slit as an arrow clanged off his helm. Adolin fell back as the beast swung at a batch of archers, crushing them with one of its claws.
"I'll take left,"
Adolin yelled, voice muffled by his helm. Dalinar nodded, cutting to the right, galloping past a group of dazed soldiers and into sunlight again, as the chasm fiend raised a foreclaw for another sweep. Dalinar raced under the limb, transferring Oathbringer to his left hand and holding the sword out to the side, slashing it through one of the chasm fiend's trunk-like legs. The blade sheared the thick chitin with barely a tug of resistance. As always, it didn't cut living flesh, though it killed the leg as surely as if it had been cut free. The large limb slipped, falling numb and useless. The monster roared with its deep, overlapping, trumpeting voices. On the other side, Dalinar could make out Adolin slicing at a leg. The creature shook, turning toward Dalinar. The two legs that had been cut dragged lifelessly. The monster was long and narrow like a crayfish, and had a flattened tail. It walked on 14 legs. How many could it lose before collapsing? Dalinar rounded Gallant, meeting up with Adolin, whose blue shard plate was gleaming, cape streaming behind him. They switched sides as they turned in wide arcs, each heading for another leg.
"Meet your enemy, monster!" Elokar bellowed.
Dalinar turned. The king had found his mount and had managed to get it under control. Vengeance wasn't a Rashadium, but the animal was of the best shin stock. Astride the animal, Elokar charged, blade held above his head. Well, there was no forbidding him the fight. He should be all right in his plate so long as he kept moving.
"The legs, Elokar!"
Dalinar shouted. Elokar ignored him, charging directly for the beast's chest. Dalinar cursed, healing Gallant as the monster swung. Elokar turned at the last moment, leaning low, ducking under the blow. The chasm fiend's claw hit stone with a cracking sound. It roared in anger at missing Elokar, the sound echoing through the chasms. The king veered toward Dalinar, riding past him in a rush.
"I'm distracting it, you fool! Keep attacking!"
I have the Rashadium,
Delinar yelled back at him.
I'll distract. I'm faster.
Elokar ignored him again. Delinar sighed. Elokar, characteristically, could not be contained. Arguing would only cost more time and more lives, so Delinar did as he'd been told. He rounded to the side for another approach, Gallant's hooves beating against the stone ground. The king drew the monster's direct attention, and Delinar was able to ride in and slam his blade through another leg. The beast emitted four overlapping screams and turned toward Delinar. But as it did, Adolin rode past on the other side, cutting at another leg with a deft strike. The leg slumped, and arrows rained down as archers continued to fire. The creature shook, confused by the attacks coming from every side. It was getting weak, and Delinar raised his arm, gesturing. The command ordered the rest of the foot soldiers to retreat toward the pavilion. Orders given, he slipped in and killed another leg. That meant five down. Perhaps it was time to let the beast limp away. Killing it now wasn't worth risking lives. He called to the king, who rode, blade held out to the side, a short distance away. The king glanced at him, but obviously didn't hear. As the chasm fiend loomed in the background, Elokar wheeled vengeance in a sharp right turn toward Delinar. There was a soft snap, and suddenly the king and his saddle went tumbling through the air. The horse's quick turn had caused the saddle girth to break. A man in shard plate was heavy and put a great strain on both his mount and saddle. Delinar felt a spike of fear, and he reined in Gallant. Elokar slammed to the ground, dropping his shard blade. The weapon reverted to mist, vanishing. It was a protection from keeping a blade from being taken by your enemies. They vanished unless you willed them to stay when releasing them.
Elokar!
Delinar bellowed. The king rolled, cape wrapping around his body, then came to rest. He lay dazed for a moment. The armor was cracked on one shoulder, leaking stormlight. The plate would have cushioned the fall. He'd be all right. Unless... a claw loomed above the king. Delinar felt a moment of panic, turning Gallant to charge toward the king. He was going to be too slow. The beast would... An enormous arrow slammed into the chasm fiend's head, cracking chitin. Purple gore spurted free, causing the beast to trump in agony. Delinar twisted in the saddle. Sadius stood in his red plate, taking another massive arrow from an attendant. He drew, launching the thick bolt into the chasm fiend's shoulder with a sharp crack. Delinar raised Oathbringer in salute. Sadius acknowledged, raising his bow. They were not friends, and they did not like one another. But they would protect the king. That was the bond that united them.
Get to safety,
Delinar yelled to the king as he charged past. Elokar stumbled to his feet and nodded. Delinar moved in. He had to distract the beast long enough for Elokar to get away. More of Sadius's arrows flew true, but the monster started to ignore them. Its sluggishness vanished, and its bleats became angry, wild, crazed. It was growing truly enraged. This was the most dangerous part. There would be no retreating now. It would follow them until it either killed them or was slain. A claw smashed to the ground just beside Gallant, throwing chips of stone into the air. Delinar hunkered low, careful to keep his shard blade out, and he cut free another leg. Adolin had done the same on the other side. Seven legs down. Half of them. How long before the beast dropped? Normally, at this stage, they had launched several dozen arrows into the animal. It was difficult to guess what one would do without that prior softening. Beside that, he'd never fought one this large before. He turned Gallant, trying to draw the creature's attention. Hopefully, Elokar had...
Are you a god?
Elokar bellowed. Delinar groaned, looking over his shoulder. The king had not fled. He strode toward the beast, hand to the side.
I defy you, creature,
Elokar screamed.
I claim your life. They will see their gods crushed just as they will see their king dead at my feet. I defy you!
Damnation's own fool, Dalinar thought, rounding Gallant.
Elokar's shard blade reformed in his hands, and he charged toward the monster's chest, his cracked shoulder leaking stormlight. He got close and swung at the beast's torso, cutting free a piece of chitin. Like a person's hair or nails, it could be cut by a blade. Then Elokar slammed his weapon into the monster's breast, seeking its heart. The beast roared and shook, knocking Elokar free. The king barely kept hold of his blade. The beast spun. That movement, unfortunately, brought its tail at Dalinar. He cursed, yanking Gallant in a tight turn, but the tail came too quickly. It slammed into Gallant, and in a heartbeat Dalinar found himself rolling, Oathbringer tumbling from his fingers and slicing a gash in the stone ground before puffing to mist.
"Father!"
a distant voice yelled. Dalinar came to rest on the stones, dizzy. He raised his head to see Gallant stumbling to his feet. Blessedly, the horse hadn't broken a leg, though the animal bled from scrapes and was favoring one leg.
"Away,"
Dalinar said. The command word would send the horse to safety. Unlike Elokar, it would obey. Dalinar climbed to his feet, unsteady. A scraping sound came from his left, and Dalinar spun just in time for the chasm fiend's tail to take him in the chest, tossing him backward. Again the world lurched, and metal hit stone in a cacophony as he slid.
"No,"
he thought, getting a gauntleted hand beneath himself, and heaving, using the momentum of his slide to throw himself upright. As the sky spun, something seemed to right, as if the plate itself knew which way was up. He landed, still moving, feet grinding on stone. He got his balance, then charged toward the king, beginning the process of summoning his shard blade again. 10 heartbeats. An eternity. The archers continued to fire, and more than a few of their shafts bristled from the chasm fiend's face. It ignored them, though Sadius's larger arrows still seemed to distract it. Adolin had sheared through another leg, and the creature lumbered uncertainly, 8 of its 14 legs dragging uselessly.
"Father!"
Dalinar turned to see Renarin, dressed in a stiff blue Kolin uniform with a long coat buttoning to the neck, riding across the rocky ground.
"Father, are you well? Can I help?"
"Fool boy," Dalinar said, pointing. "Go!"
"But..."
"You're unarmored and unarmed," Dalinar bellowed. "Get back before you get yourself killed!"
Renarin pulled his roan horse to a halt.
"Go!"
Renarin galloped away. Dalinar turned and ran toward Elokar, Oathbringer misting into existence in his waiting hand. Elokar continued to hack at the beast's lower torso, and sections of flesh blackened and died when the shard blade struck. If he rammed the shard blade in just right, he could stop the harder lungs, but that would be difficult while the beast was upright. Adolin, stalwart as always, had dismounted beside the king. He tried to stop the claws, striking at them as they fell. Unfortunately, there were 4 claws and only 1 Adolin. 2 swung at him at once, and though Adolin sliced a chunk out of one, he didn't see the other sweeping at his back. Dalinar called out too late. Shardplate snapped as the claw tossed Adolin into the air. He arced and hit in a tumble. His plate didn't shatter, thank the heralds, but the breastplate and side cracked widely, leaking trails of white smoke. Adolin rolled lethargically, hands moving. He was alive. No time to think about him now. Elokar was alone. The beast struck, pounding the ground beside the king, knocking him off his feet. His blade vanished, and Elokar fell face first on the stones. Something changed inside of Dalinar. Reservations vanished. Other concerns became meaningless. His brother's son was in danger. He had failed Gavilar, had lain drunk in his wine while his brother fought for his life. Dalinar should have been there to defend him. Only 2 things remained of his beloved brother.
two things that Dalinar could protect in a hope to earn some form of redemption. Gavilar's kingdom and Gavilar's son. Elokar was alone and in danger. Nothing else mattered. Adolin shook his head, dazed. He slammed his visor up, taking a gasp of fresh air to clear his mind. Fighting. They were fighting. He could hear men screaming, rocks shaking, an enormous bleating sound. He smelled something moldy. Great shell blood. The chasm fiend, he thought. Before his mind was even clear, Adolin began summoning his blade again and forced himself to his hands and knees. The monster loomed a short distance away, a dark shadow upon the sky. Adolin had fallen near its right side. As his vision lost its fuzziness, he saw that the king was down, and his armor was cracked from the blow he'd taken earlier. The chasm fiend raised a massive claw, preparing to slam it down. Adolin knew, suddenly, that disaster was upon them. The king would be killed on a simple hunt. The kingdom would shatter, the high princes divided, the one tenuous link that kept them together cut away. No, Adolin thought, stunned, still dazed, trying to stumble forward. And then he saw his father. Dalinar charged toward the king, moving with a speed and grace no man, not even one wearing shard plate, should be able to manage. He leaped over a rock shelf, then ducked and skidded beneath a claw swinging for him. Other men thought they understood shard blades and shard plate, but Dalinar Kholin, at times he proved them all children. Dalinar straightened and leaped, still moving forward, cresting by inches a second claw that smashed apart the rocky shelf behind him. It was all just a moment, a breath. The third claw was falling toward the king, and Dalinar roared, leaping forward. He dropped his blade, it hit the ground and puffed away, as he skidded beneath the falling claw. He raised his hands and... and he caught it. He bent beneath the blow, going down on one knee, and the air rang with a resounding clang of carapace against armor. But he caught it. Stormfather, Adolin thought, watching his father stand over the king, bowed beneath the enormous weight of a monster many times his size. Shocked archers hesitated. Sadeus lowered his grand bow. Adolin's breath caught in his chest. Dalinar held back the claw and matched its strength, a figure in dark silvery metal that almost seemed to glow. The beast trumpeted above, and Dalinar bellowed back a powerful, defiant yell. In that moment, Adolin knew he was seeing him, the Blackthorn, the very man he'd been wishing he could fight alongside. The plate of Dalinar's gauntlets and shoulders began to crack, webs of light moving down the ancient metal. Adolin finally shook himself into motion. I have to help. His shard blade formed in his hand, and he scrambled to the side and sheared through the leg nearest to him. There was a crack in the air. With so many legs down, the beast's other legs couldn't hold its weight, particularly when it was trying so hard to crush Dalinar. The remaining legs on its right side snapped with a sickening crunch, spraying out violet ichor, and the beast toppled to the side. The ground shook, nearly knocking Adolin to his knees. Dalinar tossed aside the now limp claw, stormlight from the many cracks streaming above him. Nearby, the king picked himself up off the ground. It had been mere seconds since he'd fallen. Elokar stumbled to his feet, looking at the fallen beast. Then he turned to his uncle, the Blackthorn. Dalinar nodded thankfully to Adolin, then gestured sharply toward what passed for the beast's neck. Elokar nodded, then summoned his blade and rammed it deeply into the monster's flesh. The creature's uniform green eyes blackened and shriveled, smoke twisting into the air. Adolin walked up to join his father, watching as Elokar plunged his blade into the chasm fiend's chest. Now that the beast was dead, the blade could cut its flesh. Violet ichor spurted out, and Elokar dropped his blade and reached into the wound, questing with plate-enhanced hands, grabbing something. he ripped free the beast's gem heart, the enormous gemstone that grew within all chasm fiends. It was lumpy and uncut, but it was a pure emerald, and as big as a man's head. It was the largest gem heart Adolin had ever seen, and even the small ones were worth a fortune. Elokar held aloft the grisly prize, golden glory spread appearing around him, and the soldiers yelled in triumph. XIV. Payday. Let me first assure you that the element is quite safe. I have found a good home for it. I protect its safety like I protect my own skin, you might say. The morning after his decision in the high storm, Kaladin made certain to arise before the others. He threw off his blanket and strode through the room full of blanketed lumps. He didn't feel excited, but he did feel resolute, determined to fight again. He began that fight by throwing the door open to the sunlight. Groans and curses sounded behind him as the groggy bridgemen awoke. Kaladin turned toward them, hands on hips. Bridge 4 currently had 34 members. That number fluctuated, but at least 25 were needed to carry the bridge. Anything below that and the bridge would topple for certain. Sometimes it did even with more members.
"Up and organize," Kaladin shouted in his best squad leader's voice.
He shocked himself with the authority in it. The men blinked bleary eyes.
"That means," Kaladin bellowed, "out of the barrack and form ranks. You'll do it now, storm you, or I'll haul you out one by one myself."
Syl fluttered down and landed on his shoulder, watching curiously. Some of the bridgemen sat up, staring at him, baffled. Others turned over in their blankets, putting their backs to him. Kaladin took a deep breath.
"So be it."
He strode into the room and chose a lean Alethi named Moash. He was a strong man. Kaladin needed an example, and one of the skinnier men like Dunny or Narm wouldn't do. Plus, Moash was one of those who'd turned over to go back to sleep. Kaladin grabbed Moash by one arm and heaved, pulling with all his strength. Moash stumbled to his feet. He was a younger man, perhaps near Kaladin's age, and had a hawkish face.
"Storm off,"
Moash snapped, pulling his arm back. Kaladin punched Moash right in the gut, where he knew it would wind him. Moash gasped in shock, doubling over, and Kaladin stepped forward to grab him by the legs, slinging Moash over his shoulder. Kaladin almost toppled from the weight. Luckily, carrying bridges was harsh but effective strength training. Of course, few bridgemen survived long enough to benefit from it. It didn't help that there were unpredictable lulls between runs. That was part of the problem. The bridge crews spent most of their time staring at their feet or doing menial chores, then were expected to run for miles carrying a bridge. He carted the shocked Moash outside and set him down on the stone. The rest of the camp was awake, woodworkers arriving at the lumberyard, soldiers jogging to their breakfast or training. The other bridge crews, of course, were still asleep. They were often allowed to sleep late, unless they were on morning bridge duty. Kaladin left Moash and walked back into the low-ceilinged barrack.
"I'll do the same to each of you if I have to."
He didn't have to. The shocked bridgemen filed out into the light, blinking. Most stood bare-backed to the sunlight, wearing only knee-length trousers. Moash climbed to his feet, rubbing his stomach and glaring at Kaladin.
"Things are going to change in Bridge 4, Kaladin said. "For one thing, there will be no more sleeping in." "And what are we going to do instead?"
Sigzil demanded. He had dark brown skin and black hair. That meant he was Makabaki, from southwestern Roshar. He was the only bridgeman without a beard, and judging by his smooth accent, he was probably Azish or Amuli. Foreigners were common in bridge crews. Those who didn't fit in often made their way to the creme of an army.
Excellent question, Kaladin said. We are going to train. Each morning before our daily chores, we will run the bridge in practice to build up our endurance.
More than one of the men's expressions grew dark at this.
I know what you are thinking, Kaladin said. Aren't our lives hard enough? Shouldn't we be able to relax during the brief times we have for it?
Yeah,
said Layton, a tall, stout man with curly hair.
That's right.
No, Kaladin snapped. Bridge runs exhaust us because we spend most of our days lounging. Oh, I know we have chores. Foraging in the chasms, cleaning latrines, scrubbing floors. But the soldiers don't expect us to work hard. They just want us busy. The work helps them ignore us. As your bridge leader, my primary duty is to keep you alive. There's not much I can do about the Parshendi arrows, so I have to do something about you. I have to make you stronger, so that when you charge that last leg of a bridge run, arrows flying, you can run quickly.
He met the eyes of the men in the line, one at a time.
I intend to see that Bridge 4 never loses another man.
The men stared at him incredulously. Finally, a hefty, thick-limbed man at the back bellowed out a laugh. He had tan skin, deep red hair, and was nearly 7 feet tall, with large arms and a powerful torso. The Unkalaki, simply called horn-eaters by most, were a group of people from the middle of Roshar, near Yaakoved. He'd given his name as Rock the previous night.
Crazy, said the horn-eater. Is crazy man who now thinks to lead us.
He laughed in a deep-bellied way. The others joined him, shaking their heads at Kaladin's speech. A few laughter spren, minnow-like silver spirits that darted through the air in circular patterns, began to zip about them.
Hey, Gaz,
Moash called, cupping his hand around his mouth. The short, one-eyed sergeant was chatting with some soldiers nearby.
What?
Gaz yelled back with a scowl.
This one wants us to carry bridges about as practice,
Moash called back.
Do we have to do what he says?
Bah,
Gaz said, waving a hand.
Bridge leaders only have authority in the field.
Moash glanced back at Kaladin.
Looks like you can storm off, friend, unless you're going to beat us all into submission.
They broke apart, some men wandering back into the barracks, some walking toward the mess halls. Kaladin was left standing alone on the stones.
That didn't go so well, Syl said from his shoulder.
No, it didn't.
You look surprised.
No, just frustrated.
He glared at Gaz. The bridge sergeant turned away from him pointedly. In Amaram's army, I was given men who were inexperienced, but never ones who were blatantly insubordinate.
What's the difference?
Syl asked. Such an innocent question. The answer should have been obvious, but she cocked her head in confusion. The men in Amaram's army knew they had worse places to go. You could punish them. These bridgemen know they've reached the bottom. With a sigh, he let some of his tension bleed away.
I'm lucky I got them out of the barrack.
So what do you do now?
I don't know.
Kaladin glanced to the side where Gaz still stood chatting with the soldiers.
Actually, yes I do.
Gaz caught sight of Kaladin approaching and displayed a look of urgent, wide-eyed horror. He broke off his conversation and hastily rushed around the side of a stack of logs.
Syl, Kaladin said, could you follow him for me?
She smiled, then became a faint line of white, shooting through the air and leaving a trail that vanished slowly. Kaladin stopped where Gaz had been standing. Syl zipped back a short time later and reassumed her girlish form.
He's hiding between those two barracks,
she pointed.
He's crouched there, watching to see if you follow.
With a smile, Kaladin took the long way around the barracks. In the alleyway, he found a figure crouching in the shadows, watching in the other direction.
Kaladin crept forward, grabbed Gaz's shoulder. Gaz let out a yelp, spinning, swinging. Kaladin caught the fist easily. Gaz looked up at Kaladin with horror.
I wasn't going to lie. Stormu, you don't have authority anywhere other than on the field. If you hurt me again, I'll have you—
Calm yourself, Gaz, Kaladin said, releasing the man. I'm not going to hurt you. Not yet, at least. The shorter man backed away, rubbing his shoulder and glaring at Kaladin. Today's third pass, Kaladin said. Payday.
You get your pay in an hour like everyone else.
No. You have it now. I saw you talking to the courier there. He held out his hand. Gaz grumbled, pulled out a pouch, and counted spheres. Tiny, tentative white lights shone at their centers. Diamond marks, each worth 5 diamond chips. A single chip would buy a loaf of bread. Gaz counted out 4 marks, though there were 5 days to a week. He handed them to Kaladin, but Kaladin left his hand open, palm forward. The other one, Gaz.
You said,
now. Gaz jumped, then pulled out a sphere.
You have a strange way of keeping your word, lordling. You promised me.
He trailed off as Kaladin took the sphere he'd just been given and handed it back. Gaz frowned. Don't forget where this comes from, Gaz. I'll keep to my word, but you aren't keeping part of my pay. I'm giving it to you. Understand? Gaz looked confused, though he did snatch the sphere from Kaladin's hand. The money stops coming if something happens to me, Kaladin said, tucking the other 4 spheres into his pocket. Then he stepped forward. Kaladin was a tall man, and he loomed over the much shorter Gaz. Remember our bargain. Stay out of my way. Gaz refused to be intimidated. He spat to the side, the dark spittle clinging to the rock wall, oozing slowly.
I ain't going to lie for you. If you think one creme-stained mark a week will—
I expect only what I said. What is Bridge 4's camp duty today?
Evening meal.
Scrubbing and cleaning. And bridge duty?
Afternoon shift.
That meant the morning would be open. The crew would like that. They could spend payday losing their spheres on gambling or whores, perhaps forgetting for a short time the miserable lives they lived. They'd have to be back for afternoon duty, waiting in the lumberyard in case there was a bridge run. After evening meal, they'd go scrub pots. Another wasted day. Kaladin turned to walk back to the lumberyard.
You aren't going to change anything, Gaz called after him. Those men are bridgemen for a reason.
Kaladin kept walking, Syl zipping down from the roof to land on his shoulder.
You don't have authority, Gaz called. You're not some squad leader on the field. You're a storming bridge man. You hear me? You can't have authority without a rank.
Kaladin left the alleyway behind.
He's wrong.
Syl walked around to hang in front of his face, hovering there while he moved. She cocked her head at him. Authority doesn't come from a rank, Kaladin said, fingering the spheres in his pocket.
Where does it come from?
From the men who give it to you. That's the only way to get it. He looked back the way he'd come. Gaz hadn't left the alleyway yet.
Syl, you don't sleep, do you? Sleep? A spren?
She seemed amused by the concept. Would you watch over me at night, he said. Make sure Gaz doesn't sneak in and try something while I'm sleeping. He may try to have me killed.
You think he'd actually do that?
Kaladin thought for a moment. No. No, probably not. I've known a dozen men like him. Petty bullies with just enough power to be annoying. Gaz is a thug, but I don't think he's a murderer. Besides, in his opinion, he doesn't have to hurt me. He just has to wait until I get killed on a bridge run. Still, best to be safe. Watch over me, if you would. Wake me if he tries something.
Sure.
But what if he just goes to more important men? Tells them to execute you? Kaladin grimaced.
Then there's nothing I can do. But I don't think he'd do that. It would make him look weak before his superiors. Besides, beheading was reserved for bridgemen who wouldn't run at the Parshendi. So long as he ran, he wouldn't be executed. In fact, the army leaders seemed hesitant to do much to punish bridgemen at all. One man had committed murder while Kaladin had been a bridgeman, and they'd strung the fool up in a high storm. But other than that, all Kaladin had seen was a few men get their wages garnished for brawling, and a couple get whipped for being too slow during the early part of a bridge run. Minimal punishments. The leaders of this army understood. The lives of bridgemen were as close to hopeless as possible. Shove them down too much further, and the bridgemen might just stop caring and let themselves be killed. Unfortunately, that also meant that there wouldn't be much Kaladin could do to punish his own crew, even if he'd had that authority. He had to motivate them in another way. He crossed the lumberyard to where the carpenters were constructing new bridges. After some searching, Kaladin found what he wanted. A thick plank waiting to be fitted into a new portable bridge. A handhold for a bridgeman had to be affixed to one side. "Can I borrow this?" Kaladin asked a passing carpenter. The man raised a hand to scratch a sawdust-powdered head.
"Borrow it?"
"I'll stay right here in the lumberyard," Kaladin explained, lifting the board and putting it on his shoulder. It was heavier than he'd expected, and he was thankful for the padded leather vest.
"We'll need it eventually," the carpenter said,
but didn't offer enough of an objection to stop Kaladin from walking away with the plank. He chose a level stretch of stone directly in front of the barracks. Then he began to trot from one end of the lumberyard to the other, carrying the board on his shoulder, feeling the heat of the rising sun on his skin. He went back and forth, back and forth. He practiced running, walking, and jogging. He practiced carrying the plank on his shoulder, then carrying it up high, arms stretched out. He worked himself ragged. In fact, he felt close to collapsing several times, but every time he did, he found a reserve of strength from somewhere. So he kept moving, teeth gritted against the pain and fatigue, counting his steps to focus. The apprentice carpenter he'd spoken to brought a supervisor over. That supervisor scratched his head beneath his cap, watching Kaladin. Finally he shrugged, and the two of them withdrew. Before long, he drew a small crowd. Workers in the lumberyard, some soldiers, and a large number of bridgemen. Some from the other bridge crews called jibes, but the members of Bridge 4 were more withdrawn. Many ignored him. Others, grizzled Teft, youthful-faced Dunny, several more, stood watching in a line as if they couldn't believe what he was doing. Those stares, stunned and hostile though they were part of what kept Kaladin going. He also ran to work out his frustration, that boiling, churning pot of anger within. Anger at himself for failing Tien. Anger at the Almighty for creating a world where some dined in luxury while others died carrying bridges. It felt surprisingly good to wear himself down in a way he chose. He felt as he had those first few months after Tien's death, training himself on the spear to forget. When the noon bells rang, calling the soldiers to lunch, Kaladin finally stopped and set the large plank down on the ground. He rolled his shoulder. He'd been running for hours. Where had he found the strength? He jogged over to the carpenter's station, dripping sweat to the stones, and took a long drink from the water barrel. The carpenters usually chased off bridgemen who tried that, but none said a word as Kaladin slurped down two full ladles of metallic rainwater. He shook the ladle free and nodded to a pair of apprentices, then jogged back to where he'd left the plank. Rock, the large tan-skinned horn-eater, was hefting it, frowning. Teft noticed Kaladin, then nodded to Rock.
He bet a few of us a chip each that you'd used a lightweight board to impress us.
If they could have felt his exhaustion, they wouldn't have been so skeptical. He forced himself to take the plank from Rock. The large man let it go with a bewildered look, watching as Kaladin ran the plank back to where he'd found it. He waved his thanks to the apprentice, then trotted back to the small cluster of bridgemen. Rock was reluctantly paying out chips on his bet.
"You're dismissed for lunch," Kaladin told them. "We have afternoon bridge duty, so be back here in an hour. Assemble at the mess hall at last bell before sundown. Our camp chore today is cleaning up after supper. Last one to arrive has to do the pots."
They gave him bemused expressions as he trotted away from the lumber yard. Two streets away, he ducked into an alleyway and leaned against the wall. Then, wheezing, he sank to the ground and stretched out. He felt as if he'd strained every muscle in his body. His legs burned, and when he tried to make his hand into a fist, the fingers were too weak to fully comply. He breathed in and out in deep gasps, coughing. A passing soldier peeked in, but when he saw the bridgeman's outfit, he left without a word. Eventually, Kaladin felt a light touch on his chest. He opened his eyes and found Syl lying prone in the air, face toward his. Her feet were toward the wall, but her posture, indeed the way her dress hung, made it seem as if she were standing upright, not face toward the ground.
"Kaladin," she said, "I have something to tell you."
He closed his eyes again.
"Kaladin, this is important."
He felt a slight jolt of energy on his eyelid. It was a very strange sensation. He grumbled, opening his eyes and forcing himself to sit. She walked in the air as if circumnavigating an invisible sphere until she was standing up in the right direction.
"I have decided," Syl declared, "that I'm glad you kept your word to Gaz, even if he is a disgusting person."
It took Kaladin a moment to realize what she was talking about. "The spheres?" She nodded.
"I thought you might break your word, but I'm glad you didn't."
"All right. Well, thank you for telling me, I guess."
"Kaladin," she said petulantly, making fists at her side. "This is important."
He trailed off, then rested his head back against the wall. "Syl, I can barely breathe, let alone think. Please, just tell me what's bothering you."
"I know what a lie is," she said, moving over and sitting on his knee. "A few weeks ago, I didn't even understand the concept of lying. But now I'm happy that you didn't lie. Don't you see?"
"No."
"I'm changing."
She shivered. It must have been an intentional action, for her entire figure fuzzed for a moment.
"I know things I didn't just a few days ago. It feels so strange."
"Well, I guess that's a good thing. I mean, the more you understand, the better, right?" She looked down.
"When I found you near the chasm after the high storm yesterday," she whispered, "you were going to kill yourself, weren't you?"
Kaladin didn't respond. "Yesterday. That was an eternity ago."
"I gave you a leaf," she said. "A poisonous leaf. You could have used it to kill yourself or someone else. That's what you were probably planning to use it for in the first place back in the wagons."
She looked back up into his eyes, and her tiny voice seemed terrified.
"Today I know what death is." "Why do I know what death is, Kaladin?"
Kaladin frowned. "You've always been odd, for a Spren, even from the start."
"From the very start?"
He hesitated, thinking back. "No,
The first few times she'd come, she'd acted like any other windspren, playing pranks at him, sticking his shoe to the floor, then hiding. Even when she'd persisted with him during the months of his slavery, she'd acted mostly like any other spren, losing interest in things quickly, flitting around.
"Yesterday I didn't know what death was," she said. "Today I do. Months ago I didn't know I was acting oddly for a spren, but I grew to realize that I was. How do I even know how a spren is supposed to act?"
She shrank down, looking smaller.
"What's happening to me? What am I?"
"I don't know. Does it matter?"
"Shouldn't it?"
"I don't know what I am either. A bridge man, a surgeon, a soldier, a slave. Those are all just labels. Inside, I'm me. A very different me than I was a year ago, but I can't worry about that, so I just keep moving and hope my feet take me where I need to go."
"You aren't angry at me for bringing you that leaf?"
"Syl, if you hadn't interrupted me, I'd have stepped off into the chasm. That leaf was what I needed. It was the right thing, somehow." She smiled and watched as Kaladin began to stretch. Once he finished, he stood and stepped out onto the street again, mostly recovered from his exhaustion. She zipped into the air and rested on his shoulder, sitting with her arms back and her feet hanging down in front, like a girl on the side of a cliff.
"I'm glad you're not angry, though I do think that you're to blame for what's happening to me. Before I met you, I never had to think about death or lying."
"That's how I am," he said dryly, "bringing death and lies wherever I go. Me and the Night Watcher." She frowned. "That was," he began.
"Yes," she said. "That was sarcasm."
She cocked her head.
"I know what sarcasm is."
Then she smiled deviously.
"I know what sarcasm is."
Stormfather, Kaladin thought, looking into those gleeful little eyes. "That strikes me as ominous." "So, wait," he said. "This sort of thing has never happened to you before?"
"I don't know. I can't remember anything farther back than about a year ago when I first saw you."
"Really?"
"That's not odd," Syl said, shrugging translucent shoulders. "Most spren don't have long memories."
She hesitated.
"I don't know why I know that."
"Well, maybe this is normal. You could have gone through this cycle before, but you've just forgotten it."
"That's not very comforting. I don't like the idea of forgetting."
"But don't death and lying make you uncomfortable?"
"They do. But if I were to lose these memories..."
She glanced into the air, and Kaladin traced her movements, noting a pair of windspren darting through the sky on a gusting breeze, uncaring and free. "Scared to go onward," Kaladin said, "but terrified to go back to what you were." She nodded. "I know how you feel," he said. "Come on. I need to eat, and there are some things I want to pick up after lunch." XV. The Decoy. "You do not agree with my quest. I understand that, so much as it is possible to understand someone with whom I disagree so completely." 4 hours after the Chasm Fiend attack, Adolin was still overseeing the cleanup. In the struggle, the monster had destroyed the bridge leading back to the war camps. Fortunately, some soldiers had been left on the other side, and they'd gone to fetch a bridge crew. Adolin walked amid the soldiers, gathering reports as the late afternoon sun inched toward the horizon. The air had a musty, moldy scent. The smell of great shell blood. The beast itself lay where it had fallen, chest cut open. Some soldiers were harvesting its carapace amid kremlings that had come out to feast on the carcass. To Adolin's left, long lines of men lay in rows,
using cloaks or shirts as pillows on the ragged plateau surface. Surgeons from Dalinar's army tended them. Adolin blessed his father for always bringing the surgeons, even on a routine expedition like this one. He continued on his way, still wearing his shard plate. The troops could have made their way back to the war camps by another route. There was still a bridge on the other side, leading farther out onto the plains. They could have moved eastward, then wrapped back around. Dalinar, however, had made the call, much to Satius's dismay, that they would wait and tend the wounded, resting the few hours it would take to get a bridge crew. Adolin glanced toward the pavilion, which tinkled with laughter. Several large rubies glowed brightly, set atop poles, with worked golden tines holding them in place. They were fabrials that gave off heat, though there was no fire involved. He didn't understand how fabrials worked, though the more spectacular ones needed large gemstones to function. Once again, the other light eyes enjoyed their leisure while he worked. This time he didn't mind. He would have found it difficult to enjoy himself after such a disaster. And it had been a disaster. A minor light-eyed officer approached, carrying a final list of casualties. The man's wife read it, then they left him with the sheet and retreated. There were nearly 50 men dead, twice as many wounded. Many were men Adolin had known. When the king had been given the initial estimate, he had brushed aside the deaths, indicating that they'd be rewarded for their valor with positions in the heraldic forces above. He seemed to have conveniently forgotten that he'd have been one of the casualties himself, if not for Dalinar. Adolin sought out his father with his eyes. Dalinar stood at the edge of the plateau, looking eastward again. What did he search for out there? This wasn't the first time Adolin had seen extraordinary actions from his father, but they had seemed particularly dramatic. Standing beneath the massive chasm fiend, holding it back from killing his nephew, plate glowing. That image was fixed in Adolin's memory. The other light eyes stepped more lightly around Dalinar now, and during the last few hours Adolin hadn't heard a single mention of his weakness, not even from Satius's men. He feared it wouldn't last. Dalinar was heroic, but only infrequently. In the weeks that followed, the others would begin to talk again of how he rarely went on plateau assaults, about how he'd lost his edge. Adolin found himself thirsting for more. Today, when Dalinar had leaped to protect Elokar, he'd acted like the stories said he had during his youth. Adolin wanted that man back. The kingdom needed him. Adolin sighed, turning away. He needed to give the final casualty report to the king. Likely he'd be mocked for it, but perhaps, in waiting to deliver it, he might be able to listen in on Satius. Adolin still felt he was missing something about that man. Something his father saw, but he did not. So, stealing himself for the barbs, he made his way toward the pavilion. Dalinar faced eastward with gauntleted hands clasped behind his back. Somewhere out there, at the center of the plains, the Parshendi made their base camp. Alethkar had been at war for nearly 6 years, engaging in an extended siege. The siege strategy had been suggested by Dalinar himself. Striking at the Parshendi base would have required camping on the plains, weathering high storms and relying on a large number of fragile bridges. One failed battle and the Alethi could have found themselves trapped and surrounded, without any way back to fortified positions. But the shattered plains could also be a trap for the Parshendi. The eastern and southern edges were impassable. The plateaus there were weathered to the point that many were little more than spires, and the Parshendi could not jump the distance between them. The plains were edged by mountains, and packs of chasm fiends prowled the land between, enormous and dangerous. With the Alethi army boxing them in on the west and north, and with scouts placed south and east just in case,
The Parshendi could not escape. Dalinar had argued that the Parshendi would run out of supplies. They'd either have to expose themselves and try to escape the plains, or would have to attack the Alethi in their fortified war camps. It had been an excellent plan. Except, Dalinar hadn't anticipated the gem hearts. He turned from the chasm, walking across the plateau. He itched to go see to his men, but he needed to show trust in Adolin. He was in command, and he would do well by it. In fact, it seemed he was already taking some final reports over to Elokar. Dalinar smiled, looking at his son. Adolin was shorter than Dalinar, and his hair was blonde, mixed with black. The blonde was an inheritance from his mother, or so Dalinar had been told. Dalinar himself remembered nothing of the woman. She had been excised from his memory, leaving strange gaps and foggy areas. Sometimes he could remember an exact scene, with everyone else crisp and clear, but she was a blur. He couldn't even remember her name. When others spoke it, it slipped from his mind, like a pat of butter sliding off a too-hot knife. He left Adolin to make his report and walked up to the chasm fiend's carcass. It lay slumped over on its side, eyes burned out, mouth lying open. There was no tongue, just the curious teeth of a great shell, with a strange, complex network of jaws. Some flat, plate-like teeth for crushing and destroying shells, and other smaller mandibles for ripping off flesh or shoving it deeper into the throat. Rock buds had opened nearby, their vines reaching out to lap up the beast's blood. There was a connection between a man and the beast he hunted, and Dalinar always felt a strange melancholy after killing a creature as majestic as a chasm fiend.